Sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello everyone, this is Pam de Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 291 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Edgar Carreón. Otra vez. He came back. Edgar is the CEO and founder of Dri, a tech-enabled peer-to-peer marketplace looking to disrupt the laundry industry. Edgar immigrated to the United States at the age of 10 and at the age of 22. He launched his first business in food and retail. Edgar is on a mission to change the way communities help each other focus on what matters most. Edgar was at Café con Pam on episode 134. So you have probably, if you listen to that episode, you learned a lot more about him, and he was doing something completely different back then. And so that's why I love doing kind of like returns to Café con Pam, because it's really fun to see how people evolve and how people change and how people still can succeed and do other fun things over time. I think it's really powerful that people give themselves that permission. Productivity, collaboration, and accountability. As a recovering procrastinator, I was desperate to find a solution. I wanted to be one of those people who gets things done. The truth is, I get things done. I just get them done in a different way. So I created Power Sisters. This is the only program that pairs you up with your own Power Sister so you can finish that project, apply for that job, or have some company as you tackle your never-ending to-do list. You feel me? Inside Power Sisters, we celebrate culture, neurodiverse brains, first-generation humans who bleed, and naps. Power Sisters is now open for enrollment, and if you have been thinking about working together, this is your sign, and I cannot wait to see you inside. Join us at powersisters.club. Again, powersisters.club. See you inside. And so I love that Edgar came back, and this time around, he tells us all the chisme about what he is doing now. Y bueno, sin más, here is my conversation with Edgar Carreón. Edgar, welcome back to Café con Pam. How are you?
Thank you, Pam. This is an expensive ticket to get back in here.
How long has it been? It's been a few years, yeah?
Oh, actually, it has been like, it's been like 2 years at least.
December 2019.
Wow. Right before we got hit.
Right before.
I was very optimistic in December 2019.
Mm-hmm. So you had just opened the coffee shops.
Uh-huh. So I had moved to Utah. In, I think it was July. And then I was opening coffee shops, two coffee shops, super optimistic about the future. I was working on Dri, like I still was like ideating Dri, and was doing a little bit of consulting. I was helping some small business owners. And
oh, you had your academy.
Yeah. Things were going great.
Okay. So let's pick it up from where we left off. Lots has happened since. Let's talk about that, because back in 2019, like, we're going to link it to the episode of December 2019. And like you said, you were optimistic, things were working, you were living in a new place. Now you've been in Utah for, what, 3 years almost?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to like dissect everything that happened. So this is December 2019. You had opened two coffee shops and you were doing consulting with small businesses. And then what happened?
Well, then the pandemic hit. So like we opened the cafes. In fact, I think it was like first week of January when we had officially both coffee shops were open. And January was like, you know, getting to know the community that where we were serving. And Fairway was amazing. Full transparency, I told my wife, I've been in business since 2006. So I've had my ups and downs. I've had some really high highs and some really low lows. I remember telling my wife, I was like, this is literally going to be the best year we've ever had.
In Febrero.
Uh-huh. Because we were, you know, the consulting was going really well. The businesses we were helping were doing really well. The coffee shops had just opened, and February was a huge month for the coffee shops. And I mean, huge month compared to January because we were so new. February, we had this like crazy boost. Like I think we'd done like five times more than January. Late February, there were like already some conversations about the pandemic here, and had some friends working at tech companies that were getting early insights. And March 13, it's like, we're closed.
And it's not like we're closed. It's like, the world is closed.
Yeah, the world is closed. And the thing is, our coffee shops then, well, I still have one of them. They were in a co-working space. So everybody left. Nobody was working in the office. So we went from having hundreds of people, you know, we'd see like 200 to 300 people a day. There were like 3 people in the building and I was one of them.
Oh my gosh.
Originally, we were like, this might be a month or so. Great. You know, we were like, we're set for 3 months. We're pretty prepared as a business to navigate this for 3 months. And then, you know, a lot of the conversations I was having with other folks, they're like, no, you got to prepare for 18 plus months. This is not going to be a short thing. And I was like, panic mode, you know, panic mode. And I didn't have a solution because how do you bring people back? You can't bring people back. You don't know what's going to happen. And especially like with what we were doing, you know, the coffee shops, you consider them dead at that point. And then you, as a business owner, you're trying to be nice and you're ethical and paying people their salaries because they still need to survive. But then you're like, wait a minute, but in 18 months, if I keep paying them, like, how am I going to eat? So it's like trying this balance. So what I did is I went and started doing less consulting so that I could dedicate more time to what we were building and the people there with the coffee shops. And I just went into full search mode for any grant, anywhere that I could gather any money to continue paying our team. And I did that for a while. We got all sorts of grants that we could. And it was basically like, you submit your employees' names and then they get the money direct. So that was really cool because it made it very transparent so that they didn't feel like maybe there was money kept in the business. It went directly to them. So I was submitting their names for these grants. And then you kind of run out. It was like, how much longer can you do this? And eventually I stopped. I had to let everybody go. And that was super depressing. And then my wife and I, we were like in a pretty high financial risk because we had just dumped a lot of money to these coffee shops. I mean, they were brand new, like, you know, everything, team, equipment, everything.
Are you down to talk numbers?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I can.
I mean, I think we can expand a lot more in the conversation to give a lot of clarity for people. Because especially a product and hospitality businesses, cost of doing business is super high. Overhead is like dumb.
Yeah.
Especially opening up a coffee shop and branding, equipment, employees, like, and the thing is that I don't know if people that don't own businesses or maybe people that don't have employees yet may not realize is that when you hire an employee, then it's like all these internal fees that you have to pay for.
Yeah.
And so you open 2 coffee shops. What was your investment and what was the risk of losing it? Because like with the investment, you need to have some runway. And so when you're talking about like in 18 months, if we were not producing, then the runway that we had of capital was going to either run out or just like dry out.
I have over a decade and a half experience in the restaurant food industry. I mean, I'm like pretty good at putting it together without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. But just for context, so one of our locations in February did like $26,000 in revenue, right? And when I opened back up, like opened out of like, I'm just going to open because it's just sitting there. So if there are 3 people, then we'll take care of 3 people. June, when I reopened, we did 16 or 1300 in sales that month.
June 2020?
Yeah.
Eek.
And that lasted through December. We maybe 1 month hit 2 grand.
For a month?
Yeah, for an entire month. Yeah.
No manches. How do you pay people?
Well, I mean, out of our pocket. I mean, we were losing money right all the time. But it was this idea, like for me, it was like, I don't know, I guess it was really negligent, but I felt at the time that I was showing myself that I was going to be standing in the storm and not hiding in the bunker. You know, what happened there was I was already thinking about Dri. So Dri is a gig economy platform that connects you with people in your community to either provide you a job by doing their laundry or outsourcing your laundry to someone that's looking for a job. So I was working on that then. And naturally, during that time, like nobody was going to give anyone else their laundry, right? It was like scary to put your things in someone else's house that then would come back to your house. But what happened then was that I think mentally, I'm a very, like, I mind F myself all the time when it comes to this, you know, because I feel like I have to like get myself in a mode. But what happened then was like, I'm not going to let this die. This is still the right thing because the mission itself or the original idea was, I'm an immigrant. We come to the States. Next, like Monday, my mom is gone. from 5 a.m. to like 6, 7 p.m. We've never seen a yellow school bus. We're on a yellow school bus. We don't speak the language. We're in this other school. And the idea was, with Dree in particular, was if I could get women like my mom to take on these at-home work jobs, they'll be able to stay with the things they care about. I was thinking of myself as a kid, like mama would never leave us. I was like, that's still the right thing. And just being in there with the coffee shops, standing in the storm, like literally taking a beating negligently, it gave me this confidence about Dree that was like, no, I'm not going to stop. I have to continue. If the pandemic is here to stay forever, then how do I make this work despite of? And it turned out to be a great thing. It was probably, if I hadn't done that with the coffee shops, the correlation is so close to my commitment to like working through what felt like failure already, you know?
So you've been in business since 2006. You went through the 08 recession. So what did that teach you that you applied in during the pandemic?
You know, when 08 happened, that's actually when I had, in 09 was like my biggest boost, 9, 10, 11, because everybody was afraid, but I was like single. I had nothing to lose. And so I was just like, man, like everything is for the taking. It's up for the grabs. Like nobody wants anything. And I felt like I haven't felt the impact of the recession. Like I had nothing. So it's not like...
You're not crying about it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I think the biggest connection from what happened in 08 and 09 to this time was which side I wanted to be on. Like I know very clearly where I want to go. I know my North Star. Always have. And I think that that's been really helpful to make it through this. But also like, I don't know if I said this before, but I've always considered my worst case scenario to be pretty good because I started working when I was 14 years old, bussing tables, 13, 14 years old. I always thought to myself, like to this day, like today, even though Dree has now like raised like 1.3 million, where revenue is super good, we're growing, things are great. We have an incredible team. Things are great, but I'm still afraid, or I still get scared. Maybe I'm not afraid, but I get scared sometimes. But I'm like, worst case scenario, I'm going to be a server. Like at a restaurant, at a good restaurant. That's my worst case scenario. And I'd be a goddamn good server, you know? I'd be a really good server. So I know, like, I know what my service used to make. And I'm like, hey, you know what? I can do it on 50K a year. And I can make 50K a year bussing tables, no problem. So my worst case scenario is actually pretty legit. And so, like, for me, it's really easy to, like, go through these risks. Like when I saw 08, 09, I was like, I was bussing tables just a few years ago. Like what's the big deal? And today I feel the same way. You know, like worst case scenario is not bad at all. Like the fear is gone. I still get scared. Like, damn, is this going to fail? Is this going to succeed? That's like normal, like the bipolarness of being an entrepreneur. But like, I'm not afraid of the worst case scenario, I guess, is the thing. That helps.
For sure. What's your North Star? You mentioned it, but what is it?
Yeah, well, you know, today, and I'm 100% focused now on Dree. It's like all of my time is dedicated to Dree. I gave my mom the keys to the coffee shop, so she runs that now. But today, I have this vision for Dree that we will be able to connect people in their communities to help each other live happier and more productive lives. And so whether, you know, today it's laundry, but tomorrow it could be something else, but that's the North Star. I've always been really passionate about our community. Like I've always had this chip on my shoulder of being an immigrant. I wear it proudly and I talk about it a lot. And so for me, it's like, every woman is my mom. So I feel like I just have this huge debt that I got to pay and providing these like connections that, you know, enable progress. That's my North Star. Most people know about the three wise men, you know, the story about, you know, baby Jesus was born.
Los Reyes Magos?
Los Reyes Magos. And they had their North Star. They knew where they were going. And I always talk about, like, would it have mattered if they were on a horse or if they were walking or if they were on, I don't know, an ostrich? It wouldn't have mattered. Like, it didn't matter. They knew where they were going and they knew that they would eventually get there. That's essentially how I feel. Like that's my North Star. And today it's Dree and it's through laundry, but tomorrow it could be something else. But the path is like that way, you know?
Okay. So let's backtrack because we're painting the picture. When do you decide? Because you're like in the trenches under the storm. How do you decide it's time to close the coffee shops? Like when?
When I had to tell my wife that we've got, at this point, we have three kids and it's when I told her that we needed to cut back our grocery budget to $50 a week.
for five people.
Yeah. That's when I knew I'd gone too far.
Mm.
I couldn't save it anymore. I've had a family. So my boundary's like very different than like if I'd been single, I would have probably I'd still be open. But no, my boundary was there. And I think it just seeing, thankfully, like my wife, she didn't say, she was like, okay, like if that's what we have to do, then that's what we have to do. Cause she's gone through all of this with me, you know. We actually started dating in 06.
Oh, no shit.
Before I opened up my first restaurant. Yeah. So she's seen like the whole journey. And then she probably had all this faith in me, you know, like, hey, he'll make it work. It'll turn around. But this one was the toughest one, to be honest. Like this by far was the toughest. And that's when I saw, like, that's when I knew, okay, this is not okay. You know, when you're in an airplane and they tell you, put on your mask first. I was kind of at a point where I felt like I was taking my own mask off to hand it off. And it just wasn't the right thing to do. So I closed one of them. Yeah. So my mom moved out from Seattle to Utah. And she was like, I'll help you. I'll help you bring this back. And my parents are like super optimists. I think that's where I get it. Like 100% of the time for them, tomorrow's always going to be better. So my parents, like, they packed up their stuff, like packed up everything in a U-Haul, left some things in storage. And like 2 days later, they were here. When I told my mom, like, hey, this got kind of nasty. I had to sell off some other investments I had made in the past. And anyway, she shows up and she's like, I'm going to turn this around. They had restaurants. So they had experience and they're just optimists in general. My dad was like, hey, we're going to do caterings now. So help us make ourselves available for caterings.
But at a coffee shop, what kind of caterings?
Like, because they start doing like sandwiches and paninis and Taco Tuesdays and like anything.
Innovation.
You know, my mom was like, get us on DoorDash, get us on Uber, get us on anything. Like, we need action. And what's interesting is like, she's now become in that building. She's become like the building grandma. They love her so much. Every time I'm in that area, and they're like, oh, your mom's amazing. She's awesome. She's there. I'm like, oh, that's good. And so things did turn around. The coffee shop is back to normal revenues, like from February. I'm just sharing this, like, not to glorify, but I think a lot of times with us Latinos, we have this dream of helping our parents, especially like immigrants. So what I did with my mom is I was like, Mom, I need to keep 10% of the revenue to cover all of our costs, and you keep 90%, and I don't care what you do with it. Like, but you're responsible for buying groceries. If you keep more, great. If you don't, no. So now she gets 90% of all revenue, goes into her bank account, and then the other 10% covers all of the coffee shop expenses, like, you know, the bills, taxes, etc. It's a pretty amazing situation.
And she works it.
Yeah, she works it. Monday through Friday, she's there. She brought you know, like, you hire your network. So she hired a refugee from Ecuador. They're like besties. So they both work, her, Juanita and Hilda. They're like the building grandmas.
¿Y trabajan juntas? How fun!
Trabajan juntas todos los días, yeah. So my mom has like found this, like, her place. It's her. She's still independent. She's having fun. She gets to make decisions. Like, she'll hit me up sometimes and she's like, mijo, what do you think if I do this? I'm like, if you want to make it, do whatever you want. Like, we've been so blessed, you know, that everything turned around. And I think it's just like part of not stopping. It's like when things get hard, you go through it, you know? And I think that that's like the situation has obviously turned around dramatically. So I'm in a place where, like, you know, she could do whatever she wants. If she tells me tomorrow, like, I don't want to work anymore, let's shut it down, I'd shut it down. If she said, you know, let's expand, then we would expand. You know, the blessing of, like, the fact that she was the one that came here to help me and, like, stood through the storm with me, then it just, like, do whatever you want at this point.
Nice. So if somebody's wondering, because everyone wants to open a coffee shop, maybe one day I'll open one. We've talked about this, but that's for a whole other conversation. What's the initial investment?
Well, I did a short video talking about like how inexpensive it can be to open up a restaurant. It happened, like, I was coming home one day and I turned on the phone. I was like, I should send this message to someone. And I recorded this video and I was like, man, it's really not, it doesn't have to be expensive. Where the magic happens today, if you want to open up a coffee shop, is that a lot of people are afraid. A lot of people are ready to give up. Like, this is not a good time to start a business if you're not willing to go through like really difficult times at all. Like, don't start a business if you're not ready to suffer. 2023, if you're not like wild, insane, don't open up a restaurant. It's going to be or a coffee shop. But if you are, right now, here's the thing. A lot of people are defaulting on their rent. And the tenants, what they want is someone that pays rent. When they're behind on rent, what the tenant tends to do is they keep the equipment for the back due rent. So you, as a new tenant, can show up and say, hey, I'll lease this space. I'll sign a 3-5 year lease. But part of that, I need this equipment to be mine. And they don't care about the equipment. they care about the rent. They want you to be paying, you know, whatever that is. They'll agree with you. You just keep negotiating that. They'll agree with you. You end up getting free equipment, and then you just start paying your lease. You know, you can negotiate like 3 to 4 months of no rent, maybe some tenant improvement dollars to kind of like do a facelift for the building. But if you don't get those things, that's okay. You're getting an entire coffee shop equipment, coffee machines that are 20,000 plus for free. That's the best way, in my opinion, today to go open up a coffee shop, a restaurant too. You can do the same thing with restaurants. But today, if I was to go back into it, that's what I would do. I would not go to a new building, you know, nothing built and no equipment and no plumbing and no electrical. I would not do that. Like, do not do that.
So how much?
I'd say with like 15 to 20,000, you could probably go and do it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And get it up. But you need some runway for like...
You got to be an owner operator. You got to be an owner operator. You can't be like, hey, here's 20 G's and somebody go in and you got all these employees. Now you've got to be the best employee for a few months, get the business going, start getting the community to love you, build that community. And then, you know, you start putting some money aside from those revenues. But I don't think you need a whole lot of money. I think with 20,000, you could, which to me, that's a lot of money, but 20,000, you could do it.
Yeah, no, but typically like a business startup, it depends on the industry, but like for restaurant type.
100K plus for sure.
Yeah, typically.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, listeners, think about it.
Highly recommended to go that route. The thing is, let's just say you grow your business for a year and it does gain a little bit of traction. It becomes valuable at that point. So now at that point in a year, when you've got a community, it doesn't mean you have crazy sales, just solid sales, solid growth. At that point, there's someone that has always wanted to open up a business that didn't know how to get started, that is willing to pay a premium because you've already done the hard work. So there's like a strategy there that you could follow that's accessible, where you grind for a year, slave it out, and then in a year, your business is worth something. And someone that is like, I'm repeating myself, but someone that's had a dream to open up a coffee shop or a restaurant, or they had some recipe that their grandma passed down and they've always wanted to sell that. At that point, your business is valuable to that individual because, again, the hard work is done. The risk, is this going to work? Is it going to flop? Is, you know, is the equipment working, et cetera? I did that with my first restaurant. I got a deli from there was an Indian gentleman, and he financed it, $30,000. I turned it into a fast food Mexican restaurant, La Casita Express. In 8 months, I sold it for $80,000. But it was because that was the exact story. I took it as a deli, turned it into a restaurant, had a community that was coming frequently. A gentleman came in as a customer, was like, man, I've always wanted to do this, but I've never wanted to take the risk. You've got customers, you've got the contract. I don't have to negotiate anything. I want to buy it. And I was like, okay. And I did that actually multiple times. It's very, very accessible. And when I talk to people about it, I say this, it's like, it's not very far away. You just have to be looking. Go talk to the owner inside. You see a restaurant that's like falling apart, not physically, but like where they're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Show up, ask the owner, like, how's it going? It's hard. I'm struggling. We're working really hard, but it's not working out. And then just have the bold conversation. People are depleted right now. And it's up for the taking.
For sure. And I think like the little caveat is you have to be willing to take that risk.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be crazy. You know, I think, I don't know the quote, but I think Warren Buffett talks about like this example of be greedy when people are fearful and be fearful when people are greedy. And so like right now, everybody's fearful. So
this is the time to build, people.
This is the time to build. Yeah. If you have that mindset, for sure.
Okay. Let's take a quick coffee break. Obviously, we've been talking about coffee. How do you drink your coffee now? Because the way you drank it in 2019, I don't know if it's changed.
Well, you know what? I drink more coffee now. I do primarily like either a pour over or espresso. I put an espresso machine in my house at this point.
Oh my gosh.
I'm that addicted. No, honestly, it's to see if my wife will stop going to Starbucks. Like that was the strategy.
Easy? Oh no.
No, heck no.
But it's much better than, like, if you know how to make a good coffee, it's much better than Starbucks.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The problem is, like, when is my wife going to make her own coffee?
Well, I mean, she's taking care of, like...
20 kids. No. I mean, I do espresso, and I'll just do, I love lattes. So I'm making me a latte at home. And then at work, I have a, it's called an automaker. It's an automatic pour over machine. So it's like the Chemex, but instead of like me holding the thing circle and circle, it automatically does it for you. Yeah. So I drink that every day.
Mira, qué fancy. Do you add anything, or are you a purist like Asi?
No, I'm not a purist. I do add a little bit of cream or creamer, non-flavored, just like regular creamer. But what I do care about, though, is I love coffee from Guatemala. Medium roast Guatemalan coffee.
That was my next question, since you know coffee.
Yeah, medium roast Guatemalan, single origin. Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll do like a blend of Latin American coffees, but most of the time from Guatemala. And I love like medium or less. I don't like dark roasted Guatemala. I think dark roast, actually, I don't like dark roast in general. I think they destroy like the profile of the coffee.
I agree.
But Guatemala is amazing for me. I think it's like good flavor. It's not too acidic. I'm not a fan of like Ethiopian coffees, you know, because they're super acidic. And I don't like it. I like more like chocolatey, nutty, whatever, you know, to kind of geek out. So yeah, that's how I drink my coffee.
Do you have any coffee in your coffee shop of Guatemala or your mom's now?
You know, I used to own a coffee company, and one of my partners still owns the coffee roaster itself, like the facility. So we roast.
Nice.
And then we order it fresh.
Remember when we had that conversation about making a Café con Pam coffee?
I want to. I'm still so down. You know what we should do? Pam, put a poll out and see if the people want Café con Pam coffee.
I mean, listeners said listening.
Yes.
So I'll do a poll on my story.
Yes, do a poll on your story.
We'll do a clip on this.
I'm 100% down to doing it.
You know, my dream, like actually, like when I started Café con Pam, like the goal was to go and do interviews at coffee shops.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mira, yeah. Callémonos, we're still on the coffee break.
So we're launching a coffee, Café con Pam, right?
Coming soon, yes.
But you know what? You should like getting recommendations about like the regions you should source coffee from. That would be pretty awesome, you know, because then like a Café con Pam by the people, man. Like, you know,
totally.
That'd be amazing.
Totally. On that note, you lived in Seattle for a long time. So I want to give a shout out to Wonderground, which is a coffee shop in Seattle. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Wonderground? I haven't.
They're really cool because they sell mushroom coffee. And if anyone has heard me talk about mushroom coffee, I typically drink Four Sigmatic, but I'm like, you know what? Let's switch it up a little bit. And I found Wonderground, and they are based in Seattle.
Interesting. So my wife drinks that.
Wonderground?
No, the other one.
Four Sigmatic.
Yeah, that's what she drinks now. But I didn't know there were other. I never looked into it. I just don't. I don't get it.
Oh my gosh. Well, you don't. I'm ADHD. So I do see the difference.
Didn't they say, somebody told me the other day, because I have a kid that's like pretty high energy, and they're like, give him coffee at night. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, oftentimes with kids with ADHD, it does like the opposite effect. And I was like, I can't give my 1.5-year-old coffee. Like, that feels irresponsible.
Ay, pero si te acuerdas de las abuelitas, nos daban coffee at that age.
Yeah, maybe. It just as a dad, it feels kind of weird.
Dile a tu mamá que le dé.
That's funny.
Okay, so let's get back to the show. Hola, Vanis. By the way, if you are enjoying this conversation and you want to keep talking about it, if you have some comments and maybe some questions that you have, follow me on social media and let's keep that conversation going. This is your reminder to screenshot and tag me at Café con Pam Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And let's keep talking about it. Tell me what's resonating. Tell me what isn't. Tell me what do you wish I asked the guest. This is your chance. And if you're on TikTok, I'm at Café con Pam Pod as well. Let's stay connected. Tell me now, Edgar, how do you decide to go all in with Dree?
That's a solid question. So I'll tell you this story. I talked about this before, maybe, but when I sold my last restaurant in early 2018, late 2017, I came home, I was driving home, and I started bawling. I was just like uncontrollably crying in my car. And I couldn't understand why, like I couldn't pinpoint it because I had just gotten paid for that location. And it was like, you know, the pinnacle of like our career in restaurants. But I just was bawling, like just bawling. Like I couldn't drive, I pulled over. And all I could think about in that moment, I had two feelings. One was I needed to tell someone about all the bullying I'd gone through as a kid.
Your inner child came up.
Yeah, true. Serious, true story. And I have I finally addressed it a couple months ago.
Wow.
But so I called my wife and I started telling her details of situations that happened when I got beat up. I'd be walking through a field and I'd get just random, some kid would come up and kick me. I'm just walking and he'd kick me on the ground, and or I'd get spit on, or I had a kid that called me in class and was like, "Hey, Edgar, come here." And I'm a little kid, a little immigrant kid. I'm excited that someone wants to talk to me. I go over there and he knees me in the nuts. And just I had a terrible, pretty much just a terrible middle school, whatever you call that, junior high experience. And I never told anyone. I never told my parents, and my parents were working, what's my mom going to do? And so I told my wife, and I felt a ton of relief. And then I had this feeling of anger, frustration that I had dedicated so much of my life to proving the wrong people wrong. And that kind of put me in a funk going forward. I stayed in a funk. I got really depressed, actually. I started questioning if I was good at anything. I started hearing this voice. I was like, "No, you're just lucky. You just happened to do it at the right time and it worked out, but you don't really know how to do this. You're not, this is not your expertise." During that whole time, the only thing that was at my core was being an immigrant. I just kept thinking that, and I couldn't understand why. I came to the States when I was 10 years old. At this time, I'm 36 or so, 36. I'm why? So many years later, this is so important to me. Why is this still at my core? And I ignored it. I just neglected that question. And so what I started doing is just doing a little bit of nonprofit work, just going to organizations and seeing how I could help. I thought maybe I could meet people that are trying to open up a restaurant or whatever, just I need to be out. I need to be seeing people. I did that. I, had this situation with the Dree idea that really resonated with me, because I felt like it would solve the core of what caused what I believed my problems as a kid, which was the absence of my mom because she was going to work. And so when I went about Dree, it was literally I need to go back and get Edgar as a kid, his mom back. And that is what drives and has driven me to today with Dree. That's why I went all in on Dree. That's what caused me to go all in, because I was solving my, I was packed, closing this, there's this hole in my life that hadn't been addressed, and I needed to go and solve for that situation. And so when I went to Dree, our first group of, we call them Dree pros, are the people that do laundry, all Latina women, most of them immigrants. It just made sense. And it continued to grow that way. But now we're close to 200 in this area where I live. And most of them are moms, and their biggest blessing is that they're able to stay home with their kids while still bringing an income. And so it's become a reality. So that's that continues to drive me. But that's how I went all in on Dree. It was this unaddressed, where's my mom? And I need to make sure that my mom is home again. Yeah. And that's what drove me to go all in.
So you created the business that your inner child would have loved for your mom to be a part of.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
The thing is, Pam, I have a ton of love for our community. I think you know that. And I'm not a loud individual, but I'm always looking at, well, what is the trajectory? Where are the flaws in the process? And can we work on that? Building the little bridges that connect those gaps, whatever they might be. And for me, I feel like there are a lot of kids like me and a lot of moms like my mom. And so for me, it's instead of there are a lot of ways to help the community. You can make donations, you can support businesses, you can do all that. For me, this is the path I chose to enable our community. The beautiful thing about Dree, just as an example, if you arrived in the States yesterday and you're a 35-year-old mom and your husband has gone to work tomorrow, you can start working at Dree today, right? You don't have to worry about it. You can start working at Dree now. So it's built very intentionally in that way. It's a talent that you already have because you've been doing laundry all of your life and you're able to do it in your home. If it's an apartment, you got a washer and dryer, you can do it. If it's a house or the basement of a house, you can do it. And you've already got 20 years plus of experience. So it's not you need to be trained on how to do laundry, right? It's very intentional.
So you went all in on Dree. You have partners now. When was that decision to say, we need to seek funding? Or did you always know that this was going to be a company that was going to be funded and partnered up? Or was it something that came after?
No, I knew from day one that we would seek funding. I mean, this is something that I want to bring to like every corner of this country. And also like if we can take it international, take it to Latin America, because this already happens. The technology just doesn't exist. There's already someone in your community doing your laundry, but there's no way for them to like really monetize it in a consistent and predictable way. I've known from day one that this was going to be the path. It was just a matter of when was the right time to raise capital, you know, to not raise too early.
What was the next step? To find partners or to raise?
Well, I spent about a year and a half learning about the laundry space. Like who's done it? You know, how are they doing it? How did they do it? Why did they fail? Can I contact the previous founders? What are some of the challenges in the industry, et cetera? And then the second one was like tested, you know, like with a close circle of friends. Like, hey, do you mind if I have someone pick up your laundry and wash it? No, go ahead. Like, let's try it. All right, I'll give you a bag and you put it out and blah, blah, blah. So we started testing that. And then as part of like my research, I learned that 8 out of 10 times that laundry is done in the home, it's done by women in the home. What that triggered in me was like, as a Latino, if a company is trying to sell a product to us Latinos, I want a Latino at the table because I want the cultural intelligence to be part of like building that product. Because I've been pretty intense about like holding companies accountable for that. I was like, well, 8 out of 10 times, like, and you're doing this, you know, I just felt like unfit to solve a problem that wasn't the problem that I was dealing with. And so my first like thing was I need a female co-founder. I need a woman that is a voice for the 8 out of 10 women. And basically like what happened, it's a pretty beautiful story. I started testing and there was a customer that had been a customer for about 4 months. And every time she got her laundry back, she would send me an email with like, I loved it. If they did this, it would be even better. And then next time, I love that you guys did this. If they did this, it would be. And so it was like every time she had a better idea, better idea. So finally, I went out to drop off her laundry. Her name is Natalie Paul. It turns out that she's an investor in like 60 companies in Utah. And just like they call them hidden co-founders, which is like she's the wife of a guy that's louder and out there in the community and kind of like makes it seem like he's doing everything. But in reality, she's in the background, like moving all the... And she was just amazing. So like at meeting with her that night, I walked out and I was like, she needs to be my co-founder. But she's not looking to go back to work. I came back and shared the mission and the vision for Dree. And she joined our team as my co-founder. So it was very intentional. It was about having a voice that represented our customer at the table, building the product and, you know, how we were going to interact with them through, you know, our app that we're about to release our app. And so, yeah, it was very intentional. And then, from a technology standpoint, how do you build a product that really like can go to every state? And it was bringing someone to the table that had the ability to do that. So my co-founder, Dallin Dyer, he's got an incredible experience. He's been at previously Snapchat. He led some teams there, Ancestry.com, Domo, a bunch of other companies that are just like pretty phenomenal. So I brought him on because we needed someone to deliver from the technology side, everything that Natalie as a customer felt would, you know, change her life. So it was very intent. Both of them were intentional. They were not money driven. It was like, how do we build the most incredible experience and who needs to be at the table in order for that to happen?
What's next for Dree?
So we're launching our app in mid-January, and that essentially like is what we intend to, that's going to unlock us. We've got a really cool program that we're launching. You're going to be able to earn by sharing Dree. So like if you're a Dree Pro, one of our gig workers, and you bring people to do Dree, you'll actually be earning. It's not multi-level, it's single level where like we're going to give people commission for all the business they bring to Dree, basically.
Like a referral.
Referral program. But like normally referral programs are only on the side that makes the money, you know, like that the revenue bringing side. We're actually going to launch it for our Dree Pros. So like someone like my mom, who would have shared this with every girl, every woman she met.
Con todas sus comadres.
Sí, con todas las comadres. My mom would now be able to make a commission on the work that all of her comadres, without taking from them. It takes from our take rate, not from the person that they brought on.
So kind of like a profit sharing model.
It is, yeah. It's exactly that. And it's all derived from like DAOs, like the idea of a DAO.
Yes.
So we met with an awesome company that we're going to be working with in the future that's working on DAOs. And I basically like said, well, what can we do today without doing a DAO that gives back to the people that are in fact building this? And it's not a whole lot. I understand it's not a whole lot, but it's this way, like how much more can we give today before we can, you know, go and do a DAO or something that really gives them equity and things of that nature. So, I mean, we're pretty pumped about it. The growth has been great. You know, we've been growing on average over 19% month over month. And it's a pretty amazing project.
Yay. Where are you now? How many states do you have?
We're actually in three states. So we're in Nevada, Arizona, and then Utah. Utah being our primary market. The other markets are brand spanking new. We're testing in other places. We're more testing than anything in other states, just trying to learn the logistics of new areas. You know, we don't have like a, you know, by the end of this year, we'll be in 50 states. We want to do it right. And I think it's better to, in the past, you would say like growth at all costs. And I think today, our mindset here at DRI is do whatever it takes to do it right, even if it takes longer.
Where can we find you?
DRI.com is a place. Even if you're not in the states that I mentioned, we are going to be in, you know, launching in new states. So we're testing everywhere. If you want to hop on and work with us on either side, we'd love it. We're going to be hiring a bunch in like March, April. And naturally, like I want to hire, you know, Hispanic engineers and Hispanic salespeople, and especially women. So if you're a Latina engineer, like come to DRI for sure.
I have some rapid fire questions. Are you down?
Yeah, of course.
What's the biggest success you're celebrating?
I'm a family man. I say that all the time. We had our fourth kid a year and a half ago. I celebrate family. I don't celebrate a ton of wins at work. I just kind of like push through them. But no, I'm a family man. So I celebrate my family, like being able to be with them and getting home and getting a hug from my kids and having them jump on me. Like I love being the family beanbag. That's the best thing I get to do.
How fun. Are you going to have more kids? Are you one of those like, los que Dios me quiera dar?
No, los que mi diosa me quiera dar. Los que mi esposa...
¿Aguante?
No, o sea, ya no. Ella dice que ya no, entonces ya con lo que ella diga es lo que yo hago. Pero si fuera por mí, sí tendría unos dos más, pero no, ya no, ya. Es muy pesado para... Sería muy pesado para...
Para ella,
para mi esposa.
Obvio.
Físicamente son...
Sí, es una chinga.
Es una chinga, sí.
What's the lesson you're still learning?
The lesson I'm still learning, Pam, is who I am, like owning who I am. I was mentioning like that 3 months, like 2-3 months ago, I finally addressed it. So fundraising, and you had Ruben here who's talked about like being a Latino raising venture capital. It's hard work, but like what happened to me raising venture capital was this little kid, the immigrant kid, was in every meeting I had. And all he was trying to do was get validation. All he wanted to do was like, please believe me, like, believe me, like, I can do this, believe me. And I finally had this moment where I was like, I actually went through this guided musical like journey with, I don't know how to explain it. It sounds kind of weird, but like music, blindfolded, in the middle of nowhere, like in the middle of the mountains in Utah.
O sea, sí hiciste un ejercicio para to heal your inner child.
Sí.
Good for you. Good for you for like taking that step because it's a big deal.
It was big. It was very necessary. I didn't realize that how necessary it was, but it was a big blocker. So what happened is I'm in this meditation, guided meditation, and he asks this question and he says, the guy that's guiding, he says, think of a situation where it's like high stress for you and high friction. Visualize that. I mean, it was interesting. All I saw was a little kid and I couldn't understand. I was like, no, that's not high friction. That like, there's no friction there. And then he says, think of what you want to say in that moment that you're in and say it out loud. And what came to me was, I got it. And I couldn't like connect it. I couldn't connect it, but those are the things that came. So toward the end of it, I realized that what was happening is I hadn't told myself as a kid that he had done his part, that his part was done, and that it was now my turn to take it from here. Me, because I'm no longer that kid. I'm not the insecure immigrant kid that's like illegal immigrant, not even just immigrant, illegal immigrant kid that's like trying to weave through to be able to make it happen. I wasn't that kid anymore. Like I, you know, number one, legally, I had already become a citizen. Number two, I'm already a successful entrepreneur. Number three, I'm already like building a company that's got backing from investors and I've got incredible founders. I wasn't that kid anymore. And I had to tell him that I got it from here. And so I actually went to Mexico recently. And I went to the house where I was raised and I went to the cemetery to see four of my grandparents. And I basically went down there to like tell whatever I was hanging on to, because oftentimes I would think about my grandpa. He was an orphan and how he made it through. And I would always look at the difficulties of my grandparents and say, well, what I went through is nothing compared to what they went through. But it was still thinking about my grandparents as kids and thinking of me as a kid. And so I went to their graves and I cleaned their graves and I brought them flowers and I said, thank you. Thank you for all you've done. I know you would never ask for anything from me, but I just want you to know that everything that you did has inspired me or fueled me, and I'm going to do it. And I went to the house where I was raised and I took my kids and I said, I used to play here and da da da. And I walked them and I let them play around in that street. And then I just like took a moment and I thanked the energy that was there for having raised me, but that I needed to move on. Like I needed to continue this journey. I needed to let it go. I needed to still be at my core of who I am, but no longer what makes me special in every conversation. And so I came back and I was like, I actually posted on Instagram. I was like, this is who I am now. And I have confidence because I've done this many times. And I'm trying to let that, who that kid became, I'm trying to let out on a day-to-day basis in every way. So still working on it.
For sure. Inner child work is really powerful, oftentimes painful, because it's like you have to go back and reparent, re-nurture that little you that maybe now shows up as an adult, like asking for those, whether it's validation, love, support, whatever it is. Doing that work is so powerful. Good for you. Congrats.
Yeah. You know, I would, me at the last podcast, Pam, I would have like made fun of something like that.
I know. That's why I'm like so proud of you.
It's been pretty incredible. Us like immigrants, we have all this fire inside of us, but some of that stuff holds us back, you know, and I didn't realize how much it was holding me back until I was in those meetings. And just, I always felt like that little immigrant kid, even though I no longer was that kid, you know. If I have this passion for the people that I claim to love, then I need to work on this. Because like, this is the other thing. And this is one of the things I love about Ruben. He's like, no, this is going to fucking happen. This is going to happen. This is our decade, you know, or century, whatever he says. Like, and I'm with that. And I just like, for me, it's like, I don't want to miss the opportunity to be part of that. And if I want to be part of that, then I need to be like very like refined. I can't be sloppy. I can't be like with all those childhood insecurities. I have to be refined. So for me, it was this idea of, I don't want to miss out on that journey. I better get this thing figured out.
Well, I'm so glad. So proud. Vicks or Té de Manzanilla?
No, Vicks. I still rub it on my kids' noses. Man, the moment my kids get sick, I'm like, véngase. All on their nose.
Joy or peace?
Peace.
Discipline or habits?
Discipline.
Give me blank and I will blink.
Well, I just thought like, give me time and I'll enjoy, but I don't know.
I mean, that works. That works. See, don't judge it, Edgar. Listen to your inner voice. It's powerful. What is stopping you?
Nothing. Right now, I feel very liberated.
Yay. What is a talk you can do without prep?
How to start a small business.
What do you want right now?
Nothing. Nothing.
You got enough?
I'm in a good place. Every opportunity is there.
What would you do if I gave you $100?
Leave him in my wallet forever.
Loco no se le ha quitado. Listeners. What would you do if I told you you had to spend it on yourself?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would probably buy like some shirts or something. I don't know. I don't like, if somebody gives me cash, I hold it. Like I just hold it.
Qué raro.
I don't buy things with cash. It's weird.
What? That's weird for you to hold it under the mattress.
No, in my wallet, because nobody gives me that.
Pues es lo mismo. Like,
look, it's true. I mean, no, you can't see this, but like my dad gave me some money not long ago. It's like 4 months ago. It's still there.
I mean, this actually happened to this guy that was my neighbor. He was keeping all his money in the mattress. And then when he finally opened it, the dollars were rotten.
No, that's so bad.
Sí, por la humedad del colchón. O sea, like it's a thing.
There's this brand that I really like. I just buy two shirts from them.
Good for you. Okay. And if you had a magic wand, what would you do to fix your business?
I would have focused on sales a little bit earlier, like doing having salespeople on the team earlier. I didn't realize that we could sell this service in different ways. Yeah.
Okay, Edgar, ya se nos acabó el tiempo. Thank you so much for being a Café con Pam otra vez. Excited for what's to come.
Thank you, Pam.
And your changes and your shifts and your growth. This is awesome. Thank you for sharing.
I got to give you a shout out. This sounds cliche, but Pam is like my sister, like legit my sister. I say that because we don't think alike in many things.
Nos peleamos todo el tiempo.
But... No, but Pam and I think it's like an amazing example for me. Pam, I don't know if you consider me this kind of a friend, but for me, Pam, like you genuinely are an example of what relationships should be, even if you don't think the same. I feel so comfortable telling you who I am, what I believe and how I believe things should be, because you listen to it and though you disagree with it, you judge the idea, you don't judge the person. And I really, really love that about you. Like you genuinely, Pam, for real, are one of the most incredible people that I've ever met. And I'm really thankful to have you in my life, for real.
Ay, mira, qué bonito, gracias. No, pero sí, it's true. It's true. Like you and my friend Luis, you're both like my brothers from another mother. And we fight all the time because we disagree in so many things. But at the same time, it's like this really powerful connection of like... Aunque me caes mal, like, me caes bien, you know?
Eres buena onda.
Pero, like, frankly, I think from those relationships, like, to me, it's very important to engage with people that don't think like me. Because then I get to challenge and I am challenged as well, you know?
You can have the most influence in people that don't think like you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people you can influence the most. You and I have had a lot of conversations about, like, self-care and like mental health. And I for many years was always like very stiff on like, how do you fix mental health? You work hard and you win more. And you know, like this idea of like work, 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 which I do love work. But look, Pam, like whether you took me to that mountain or not, a lot of the things that I heard from you, they do play a role in influencing feeling comfortable with things that I wasn't comfortable with. So it's like those things they do really matter. That's why I have hope that you're going to change from hearing me.
I'm not going to become domestic, everyone, or have kids.
Oh, man. Okay. Stay shining.
Okay, listeners, that was my combo with Edgar. And Edgar is a friend of mine. I was mad at him. So you will probably listen to our conversation, how we clear some of things up. I think we did this online, maybe. And so, first of all, I want to hear your thoughts about the new journey that Edgar is now into. I want to hear your perspective on the power of saying, I'm going to switch things. I am no longer going to do what I'm used to doing. And I give myself that permission to now follow what my inner voice is saying and go for it. And so, one of the things that I actually enjoyed thoroughly about this episode is how much more connected to his body Edgar is and how much more, I mean, I guess the word is intuitive, which I think he always was very a super intuitive person. He's one that always listened. And I think everyone is, frankly, which is, I don't know, for some reason, we're afraid to name that. But your inner voice is really powerful. And I am glad to hear that Edgar is now listening to that and how much more connected to his inner voice is and how he embarked into this healing journey. It makes me so proud to see friends, especially men, especially Latino men, go into a journey of healing and exploration of that basement of the shadows that we carry that many times haunt us, that healing of that inner child that is so ready for us to share our hand and say, I'm here for you. How can I support? So that was really moving for me to hear. And I'm glad we were able to capture it for all of you because it shows a lot of strength for someone to say, you know what, I did this and I did this for me, because it often seems selfish. And I think when it comes to healing and looking at nurturing that inner child, it's not that it's selfish, it's that for once we can choose to say, I'm showing up for me. because we're often trained to show up for others all the time, especially with our culture, no? Entonces, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Edgar and I can talk about everything for a long time, and we can argue, and we argue in ways that say, you know what, I don't agree with you, and let's talk about it. And I think that's really a powerful friendship that we have. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know. Tag me on all the places and spaces. I would love to hear your thoughts at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. That's where I hang out the most. Also, I am on TikTok at Gobiux and or at Café con Pan Pod. I barely post on there, but if you want me to post, I will. And I hope we stay connected. I also would love to invite you to leave a rating and or a review in whichever platform you are listening on. The most popular is, of course, Apple Podcast. So Apple Podcast lets you do a rating and a review and a subscription. So don't forget to subscribe. That makes also a difference. And if you have that setting on your phone that downloads the episodes, it's going to take up a lot of your memory. So remove that. You don't have to download the episode. You just have to have it on your queue of what are the upcoming episodes. So if you're an Apple Podcast listener, go into your settings and maybe remove that download because it like bugs your phone down. I think this is why a lot of people don't subscribe because they're like, all the episodes are going to be downloaded on my phone and I don't want them to be downloaded because it takes a lot of space. So it's a setting that you can take off very easily. If you listen on Spotify, you can leave a rating. It's super easy. What I do like about Spotify is that it only lets you leave a rating after you have listened to at least 2 episodes, I believe, if they haven't changed that, which is really good because then it's almost like, okay, if you don't like one, give it a second chance, listen to another episode, and then you can rate it. And so I appreciate all of your stars that you leave me, all the feedback that you provide. It's really helpful, and it's not only helpful for us as a Café con Pan team to improve the show, but also for other listeners that are looking to find podcasts to listen to. I do appreciate your time and the effort that it takes you to leave a rating and a review and for you to subscribe. So thank you so much. If you're interested in my offers as a business owner, Power Sisters is now open, powersisters.club. And this is the one and only productivity and accountability program that pairs you up with your own Power Sister. And I teach you how to do a Power Sister meeting, how to hold each other accountable, how to commit to your intentions, how to be more productive. And we do that through all of the tools. I teach you everything in there inside Power Sisters. And I know not everyone needs everything. So there are 3 different tiers that you can choose from when it comes to joining Power Sisters. And I hope they're supportive to you. We've been doing Power Sisters since 2020, I believe. 2019. Oh my gosh. And it's been super fun. So I hope you explore. Join us. I hope you see you inside. Iwana listeners, thank you so, so much for being here today. I really appreciate your ears. I hope you are taking time to tend to yourself. I hope you are exploring ways that make you feel joy. I hope you are exploring ways that give you inner peace so you can navigate this world with confidence and support. Y bueno, como siempre, thank you for being here. Y stay shining.